And welcome back, everybody, to another episode of Kicking It With Kira here on Full Press Radio. Here live on a Thursday. If you're listening on the download after it goes live, appreciate that as well. I'm your host, Ricky Keeler, and we have made it to episode number 10. I consider that a milestone because, hey, 10 episodes is a lot of episodes. So I want to thank all of you for listening to the first episode or the next, whether it's just this episode or the other episodes in addition to this. I appreciate all of the support as well. You can follow me on Twitter at RickNader555. You can follow Full Press Radio on Twitter. Just go to at Full Press Radio. Or you can follow Full Press Coverage at FP Coverage. We have NBA, NFL, MLB, NHL, college sports. We got everything here at Full Press Coverage. And we're excited to bring that to you over now as we in the new year in 2020. In the decade to come. A lot of great stuff coming up on Full Press Coverage. We're going to do a little NFL playoffs today. Of course, I got to get into my Patriots, talk a little bit of the coaching searches around the NFL and college football. The big news today in college football, according to Yahoo Sports, Mike Leach is becoming the new head coach at Mississippi State after Joe Moorhead got fired. That's a really interesting, fun hire to see Mike Leach go against Nick Saban and Ed Orgeron and Jimbo Fisher. The SEC is just a lot of fun. Whether you think they're the best college football conference or not, it's still a lot of fun to watch some of these coaching battles, and Mike Leach will be interesting. See how he does down there in Starkville. Of course, I wouldn't want to be Alex Cora right now with the Red Sox, where the report coming out from The Athletic and Evan Drellick is in regards to the Red Sox using the video replay room from 2018. I would not want to be Cora with the 2017 Astros thing. Sounds like he might get disciplined for that as the bench coach, and now for this. Not looking good for Alex Cora. College basketball, of course, is in full swing as now. As you know, those games have been constantly changing. A lot of big upsets in college basketball. Some big games this weekend. Baylor, Kansas is a huge game in the Big 12. Auburn's still undefeated in the SEC. San Diego State still undefeated in the Mountain West. That's a team I think you want to keep an eye on when you get into March Madness, and we'll get into more of that as the weeks go on as we get closer to March. But I want to start with football, and we'll talk with Brayden Holacek of Full Press Chiefs and the Full Press Chiefs podcast coming up later on to preview the Chiefs game in detail, and we'll talk about the other three games as well. I want to get into the Patriots, of course, because surprisingly, maybe not so much surprised, but they did lose to the Titans 20-13 on Wild Card Weekend. Snaps their streak of AFC championships made consecutively. And while we've seen Tom Brady come out with his Instagram post on Wednesday about how he's not... Remember Saturday he said it's not likely I retire. He kind of corrected that. Or hopefully not, he said, and corrected that with the Instagram statement. It just felt like the end. And I listen all the time to Mark Schofield from the Scho Show, formerly of Locked On Patriots. And I thought he gave a great kind of like reminiscing look back at 20 years. Where you got to remember where you were for that Super Bowl. I'm 27 years old, so as a Patriot fan, I only know really Drew Bledsoe for a little bit and Tom Brady. So Saturday's loss felt different. Whether Tom Brady comes back or not, I don't know. I don't think anybody else knows. The fact of the matter is, even if Tom Brady does come back, the Patriots are going to need more weapons at wide receiver. They can't rely on Julian Edelman, who was banged up all season long to do everything. They can't rely on those running backs, James White, Sony Michel, to do everything. They need more from N'Keal Harry. They need more from Mohamed Sanu. Whether it's adding a receiver, because they got the 23rd pick this year. It's the earliest they picked in a long time. Outside of a couple years ago when they took Isaiah Wynn because of the Brandon Cooks trade. Things are going to change in New England. And we've seen that already with Joe Judge taking the Giant head coaching job. And I'll talk more about that later. What goes on with Josh McDaniels? Who knows? Cleveland's the last job out there. I don't know really what he's going to do there or what the Browns will do. But if McDaniels leaves, that creates even more coaching changes over the last couple years with the Patriots. Does Tom Brady want to deal with another coach he's not familiar with? And I think that's the argument to where you could say, well, why would he go to another team if he has to learn a new system? I mean, obviously, if McDaniels leaves, you would think Chad O'Shea is lined up to be the offensive coordinator with the Patriots. It would just make too much sense. But take a look at what the Patriots are right now. They're going to lose a couple big-time defensive players in free agency. Devin McCourty is a free agent, potentially. Kyle Van Noy is a free agent. So the Patriots have a really old team defensively. So even if Brady came back, they're going to take a step back in all likelihood. But is this still Tom Brady's best shot at a championship? You've seen the arguments with the Chargers, and I don't know if they're close to a championship, but he'd be the main attraction of the Chargers. They open a new stadium, get to work with Keenan Allen, get to work with Austin Eckler, get to work maybe with Hunter Henry, who's also a free agent. And you have at least Derwin James and Joey Bosa on defense. So it's not a championship-made scenario yet, but it would make the Chargers at least improve from this past year. They were terrible. But if this is the end, you have to go back and appreciate what the Patriots have given you, both likers and haters alike. 20 years of sustained excellence. And you can look at the cheating scandals, Spygate, Deflategate, all that stuff. This new one, which still hasn't had a resolution to it, which I'm really surprised by. I thought the NFL said that was going to happen quickly, but nevertheless, the investigation for that is still going. It's still in this era of free agency and pairing. I was talking to my brother, who's going to be 18 on Sunday, by the way. Happy birthday, Matt. About it after the loss on Saturday. I said, this is what 30 other teams go through. Parity, free agency, salary cap. Patriots have not really been affected by that in two decades. They just haven't. They've always found ways to make it work. Through numerous coaches taking different jobs, they've always seemed to find ways to make it work, and they still can. But it felt like the dynasty kind of... It felt like it died Saturday night. It really did. I don't know if that will change over time or depending on what the moves the Patriots make over the offseason, but it's going to be a fun offseason in New England for a lot of different reasons. My gut, I don't think Tom Brady plays next year with the Patriots. I could be wrong. I hope I'm wrong. But that's my gut right now. But again, I don't think anybody knows. We've got 2 months to figure that out, which is weird to think if you're a Patriot fan and thinking there's football Saturday and divisional round and you're not in it. It's different. But give all the credit to the Tennessee Titans. They did an excellent job. Derrick Henry had a huge game on the ground. They played good defense against the Patriots. You'd argue New England kind of missed some chances offensively. Obviously, the goal-to-go situation on the one, you've got to get some, got to get six there. They did not. They've struggled with red zone offense all season long. And it finally came back to bite them. All the problems they had finally came back to bite them. And for a defense that, yeah, did a good job holding Tennessee to 14 points for that pick six by Logan Ryan at the end. Which you hope that's not Tom Brady's last pass. But if it is, it is. It's not a big deal, I think. You still got Derrick Henry ran all over you. This is a defense that struggled against the run against some of the top running backs in the league, like Nick Chubb, like Mark Ingram, and those players they played throughout the season. So a lot of changes coming in New England. I think that's going to be the team you want to watch the most over the spring to see how they improve between free agency in March and the draft in late April. Which, by the way, big draft news. Tua Tagovailoa is coming out at quarterback, and I think he'll be a top 10 pick if the medicals hold up. A guy I like, Jake Fromm out of Georgia, he declared for the draft on Wednesday. I think he's going to be a really good fit for a team. I know he's got really only short intermediate route accuracy, but I think there's value in that. And I think you got to give a lot of credit for Fromm to work on a Georgia wide receiving core that took a lot of hits over the course of the season. We'll get into more of that when we do some draft stuff. We'll find some good guests to talk NFL draft with. But let's get into the head coaching searches, and I'll save my thoughts for the playoffs when I talk with Braden later on for the other four games. I'm going to start with Carolina. Matt Rhule got a big seven-year contract. I think the Panthers were looking for a coach. Their new owner, David Tepper, was looking for a coach that could bring leadership. And I think Matt Rhule, from rebuilding Temple to rebuilding Baylor, he's the guy that could do that. So I think when you look at the Panthers, what do they do at quarterback? Do they keep Cam Newton? Do they still try to build around Kyle Allen or Will Greer? Do they go draft a quarterback in the top 10 this year? A lot of questions in Carolina. But you have DJ Moore, you have Curtis Samuel, you have Christian McCaffrey. You have some good players on defense like Luke Kuechly. The Panthers, at least, I think, have a good foundation where you could give Rhule 7 years to try to figure it out. So Carolina, to me, I think makes a lot of sense for Rhule. I was surprised he did not get the Giant job. Matt's going to lead me to my thoughts here on the Giants. Hiring Joe Judge to the Patriots special teams coordinator and wide receiver coach. I know a lot of people are talking about, well, after the judge hire, it seemed like the Cowboys only interviewing Marvin Lewis in addition to Mike McCarthy, that the Rooney Rule is broken, and in a way it is. But shouldn't discredit Joe Judge. I know he's only 38 years old, but he does a great job as special teams coordinator. I go back to week 17 when the Patriots are playing the Dolphins, and you heard the comments from Judge that they were going to treat fourth down like a defensive down because the Dolphins like to do fake punts and fake field goals, and his special teams were prepared. The Patriots had the best special teams unit in the NFL this year, and that was without their kicker. They were using Nick Folk to kick down the stretch at the end of the game. They were using Mike Nugent before that. They had a rookie punter, and they were still the best special teams unit in the NFL. Was a lot of that come from Matt Slater? Yeah, probably. Matt Slater, in my mind, got a case to be a Hall of Fame special teams player. But don't discredit Judge because Eric Bieniemy didn't get a job. And I hope Eric Bieniemy gets a job. We're going to get into that later. I think he's done a good job with Patrick Mahomes and changed the way with that Chiefs offense with Andy Reid. But Judge has earned it. Bill, as Albert Breer talked about all week, Bill Belichick gave him the wide receiver coach job to help get him a head coaching job. And what's the one thing the New York Giants needed? Leadership. They tried the offensive coordinator route with Ben McAdoo. Didn't work. Outside of that 1 year, they went 11-5 and everybody went on a boat before the Packer game. They tried Pat Shurmur. Didn't work. You don't always need the offensive coordinator that pleases the quarterback. Newsflash, it works, does not work more often than it does work. More often than not, it fails. Pat Shurmur, it failed. The Giants need a guy that has leadership on both sides of the ball, has worked with many different players, which Judge does on special teams, and knows how to lead. You're in a rebuilding process, which Dave Gettleman finally admitted on his press tour this week, or this past week, that you need to basically, they should have tried to rebuild and win at the same time. You can't do both in the NFL. You could do it. We've seen it in some cases in baseball where teams maybe peak a year ahead of schedule. It's not common in football. And we'll see what the Giants do with the fourth pick. I think they've got a lot of options for it. You still got Daniel Jones. You still got Saquon Barkley. As long as Judge puts good coordinator around Daniel Jones, it can work. If he puts a good defensive coordinator around him, it can work. The key is don't be like Bill Belichick, which we've seen Eric Mangini try to do. We've seen Josh McDaniels the first time around try to do it. You have to be your own person, which Brian Flores seems to be in Miami. And even though they went 5-11, you saw the improvements that Brian Flores made with the Dolphins. I wouldn't dismiss Judge also just because of the Belichick coaching tree. I get it. The Belichick coaching tree hasn't produced good results. But that shouldn't carry over to Joe Judge either. So if I'm talking to Giant fans out there, I know some Giant fans who do listen to the show. Be patient. It's different than what you've hired, but it's also a good thing that it's different than what you hired. I would have argued for Rule, and I would have been okay with McCarthy with the Giants, but overall, I think they ended up making a good hire. For the Cowboys, like Mike McCarthy a lot for them. I know people say it's a safe hire, but I think that's what Dallas needed. They needed stability. They needed a guy that had a track record of winning. Even though McCarthy's only won one Super Bowl with Aaron Rodgers, it's still a Super Bowl. The Packers consistently got to the playoffs every year, pretty much, with McCarthy. And now you give McCarthy Dak, you give him Elliott, you give him Cooper, a chance for a coach to maximize the talent that's there in Dallas, because there is talent there. So I would argue McCarthy makes the best sense for the Dallas Cowboys. And in the end, we'll see what the Browns do, but they've got time. They've got their pick of the litter to go about whatever head coach they want. Let me get into my quick takeaways from the wild card weekend. I already talked about the Patriots, and then we'll get into my conversation with Brain later on. And then also later, we'll look ahead to the national championship game between LSU and Clemson that takes place on Monday. Let me start with Vikings Saints. And this is going to be my other rant here, so bear with me. Overtime rules do not need fixing. There is an aspect of the football game that's called defense. Okay? If you want to get the ball back for your quarterback in overtime, play defense. And here's why I have a problem with the whole we need to change the overtime rules narrative. And I said this last year to people with that AFC Championship game. If the roles are reversed and Patrick Mahomes scored the first touchdown in overtime, are you arguing Tom Brady should get the ball back? If you're a Patriot hater, probably not. If the roles are reversed from Sunday and Drew Brees scored the first touchdown in overtime, are you arguing Kirk Cousins should have got the ball? No, because you wanted Drew Brees to win. You wanted Patrick Mahomes to win last year. You wanted Drew Brees to win this year. They didn't. So I don't like the people that argue with the overtime change rules. They don't need changing. The rules were easier years ago when all you do is kick a field goal. Now they make it at least somewhat harder. You have to get a touchdown if the other team gets the ball back. Play defense. I get it. We're all about offense in this day of the NFL, but defense still matters. We saw it in the Super Bowl last year how much defense matters. You have to make overtime about using all three aspects of the ball. Not of the team. Offense, defense, special teams. You can't change, otherwise we're going at it like starting everybody at the 25 or midfield again. I'm fine with it in college. I'm not good with it in the NFL. But right now the rules are fine the way they are. You want to argue offensive pass interference? You want to argue the Saints got robbed by the refs again? I can't do that. The Saints choked. Drew Brees fumbling late in the fourth quarter when the Saints had a chance to tie the game. Taysom Hill really made their big flash plays, but give the Vikings defense a lot of credit. They went into New Orleans. The Saints, I'm sure, had revenge on their mind from the miracle game, and they went in there and shut down Drew Brees. And for a Saint team, we talk about teams wasting their window. Sean Payton's only got one championship, too. And this was supposedly one of the Saints' best teams in terms of talent in a long time, and they were one and done. A team that a lot of people thought could be that one wild card team that made the Super Bowl. And could go to Lambeau and win. Could go to San Francisco and win. Didn't do it. Didn't do it. So give Kirk Cousins credit. I think he got the monkey off his back this week. I give Seattle a lot of credit. Yes, Carson Wentz got hurt with a concussion early in the game. And that really changes things for the Eagles. And stop with the whole injury prone narrative of Carson Wentz. A concussion doesn't count as that. Really doesn't. And you feel bad for Carson Wentz, who got the Eagles there when they had a lot of injuries at wide receiver and running back throughout the latter portion of the year. Just for Wentz to get the Eagles to the playoffs was an accomplishment. But Seattle, even without their top two running backs, Marshawn Lynch looked like Marshawn Lynch again, to some form. DK Metcalf made big plays when they needed him, and Seattle used their defense. And that's why I think they're the most scariest team in the NFC left. Because they find ways to win with low scoring. And Russell Wilson makes plays. And Russell Wilson has a shot to make it to a third Super Bowl. We talk about Brees, we talk about Rodgers in the all-time ranks. What if Russell Wilson wins a second Super Bowl? We'd give him as many as Peyton Manning. We'd give him one more than Brees, one more than Rodgers. Now, Russell Wilson's not setting records, but he's changing the game in his own right. And I think that Seattle-Green Bay game Sunday night is going to be so much fun. I think that's the most exciting game of the week. For Buffalo-Houston, give Deshaun Watson credit. Texans were down early. Big. Watson found a way. Josh Allen made a couple bad mistakes. And we said coming into this game, Josh Allen could not make mistakes if the Bills wanted to win this game. Well, he did. Watson made the plays when he had to. Texans find a way to win in overtime on that crazy Watson play where he avoids a sack, rolls out, gets a big play to get him into field goal range in OT. Despite Bill O'Brien's weird 4th-and-1 going for it in the fourth quarter, despite the Bills punting on going for it on 4th-and-27 when they could have punted and had 3 timeouts and maybe changed field position a little bit. A lot of weird things in that first game where the Texans found a way to win. We already talked about the Patriots losing to Tennessee over the weekend. So we got Vikings Niners Saturday at 4:30, Titans Ravens at 8. Then you have Texans Chiefs and Arrowhead at 3:00 on Sunday. Seahawks Packers at 6:40 to find out who goes to the conference championship games. And when I look at the theme, we're going to get into my conversation with Braden in a little bit here. The theme for me is road quarterbacks with not much pressure. Take a look at all these 4 matchups. 49ers Vikings. Pressure's all on Garoppolo, not Cousins. Garoppolo has to win a playoff game. And this is his playoff debut. How does he handle the pressure? Titans Ravens. Everything's on Lamar Jackson. Everything. He's going to be MVP of the league. If he goes one and done again, there'll be a lot of questions around the Ravens. So there's really zero pressure on Ryan Tannehill. He's gotten the Titans further than everybody would have thought they were. They beat New England. Despite Tannehill really limited in the passing game, they won the game. Texans Chiefs. Everything's on Patrick Mahomes. Deshaun Watson got his playoff win. Texans beat KC and Arrowhead earlier this year. There's more pressure on Patrick Mahomes than Deshaun Watson. And in the final game, way more pressure on Aaron Rodgers. Can he win a playoff game here at Lambeau against Seattle? Can he get the Packers back to the Super Bowl again? How many more chances is Aaron Rodgers going to have? So when you think about it, there's really not much pressure on Russell Wilson. There's some, but Seattle's gotten further with their injuries. There's more pressure, again, on Rodgers than Wilson. So road quarterbacks this week really aren't feeling the heat. And I can make the argument that two road teams are going to win. And I think both might be in the NFC. I think the Vikings might go into San Francisco and win. I respect the Niners, but at the same time, I think the Vikings maybe found some confidence. We'll see how healthy Adam Thielen is, and he popped up on the injury report. So that's going to be a little bit of a concern. But the Vikings, if Adam Thielen can go and be effective, that changes things a little bit. Then you have the case where in Green Bay, I give the Seahawks a great chance to beat the Packers. If it's low scoring and the Packers aren't really that high-flying offensive team, Seattle's got a shot. And a really good shot. Even with Mark Ingram banged up for the Ravens, though, I just don't see how Tennessee goes into Baltimore and wins. I think that'll be a low-scoring game, too. And I think Kansas City is going to find a way to beat the Texans, but I think it'll be closer than you think. I know the spread's like 10. I don't see it being a double-digit game. I think the Texans can find a way to keep that game close, especially if Will Fuller plays. I think that changes things for Houston a little bit. So without further ado, I want to get into my conversation with Braden Halichuk from Full Press Chiefs. We talked about a variety of topics. I think you guys are all going to enjoy them. We talked about Chiefs offense. We talked about Eric Bieniemy. We talked about the Texans and that first matchup and how things have changed since then. We did this interview on Wednesday, so if things have changed since then, we apologize. Without further ado, let's get into my conversation with Braden Halichuk from Full Press Chiefs. And I'll be back on the backside of this interview to talk about it a little bit. Give my picks for this week's playoff games and talk about the national championship on Monday. And joining me now on Kicking It with Keeler is a special guest today to help us look at the four divisional playoff games, in particular the Texans-Chiefs game Sunday at 3:05 Eastern on CBS. It is Braden Halichuk. He is the founder of Full Press Chiefs and hosts the podcast on Full Press Chiefs. Braden, thanks for joining the show. How are you today?
I'm doing good. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely happy to have you. So when you take a look at this matchup, obviously it's been a whirlwind for the Chiefs the last couple weeks. They somehow get the first round bye. They somehow avoid playing the New England Patriots in the divisional round and get the Houston Texans. So what's your initial look at this game? Are you surprised it's the Texans and not the Patriots? Give me your thoughts on this game before we break it down a little bit.
Yeah, I'm a little surprised that it's not the Patriots. I think just kind of looking overall at the AFC, I mean, it was going to be really interesting to see who came out of Wild Card Weekend with the wins. It was a lot of toss-up games there. So, but I just thought anything in the power of the Patriots, they weren't really going to come out of that game with a loss. So I was, a little surprised, but I guess it just kind of goes to show, you know, they have, you know, the pieces around Tom Brady, there's still a lot to develop there. As far as the Texans go, I think just the magic of Deshaun Watson. I mean, that's what really sticks out to me in the fact that they were able to come back from that 16-0 deficit of the Buffalo Bills. And I think that's what really is kind of the biggest worry on Chiefs fans' mind is any time Deshaun Watson can go off with the snap of the finger, it seems like.
Yeah, I think you look at that game last week where Deshaun Watson finds a way to come back from 16-0 down, makes the big play in overtime to secure the win against the Bills. And you look at it for him, it's like he didn't have a huge monkey on his back, but he got a small monkey off his back, and I think it's a little worrisome from the Chiefs' perspective in that he's got a little house money going in this game because the Texans are 10-point underdogs. Not a lot of people are expecting them to win, as opposed to really a lot of the pressure being on Patrick Mahomes to win this game.
Yeah, for sure. And just kind of given the history of the Chiefs in the playoffs, especially at home, there's always, I think, going to be that little bit of nervous energy there. A lot of people, I mean, are more confident and deservedly so with Mahomes, but you know, it's not going to be easy, definitely, going against Deshaun Watson.
So looking back, the Texans and Chiefs played each other week 6 at Arrowhead Stadium. Texans won 31-24, rallied from a 17-3 deficit in the first quarter. Looking back at that game, Brandon, I know these teams have changed a lot since then. Do you take away anything from that week 6 game to apply it here? And I think from a Texans perspective, at least for me, I can look at it, you got down 17-3 and still found a way to win. We can really handle anything in that hostile environment.
Yeah, I think the biggest thing I'd take away is I think a lot has changed since that game, especially on the Chiefs side. They were missing a lot of pieces. And Chris Jones, Andrew Wiley, Eric Fisher, Sammy Watkins. You have a couple guys that are on the team now that were not on the team during that game. So I think really you got a lot of personnel change and the health is a lot better. And for Houston, I think really their offensive lines come together. I know it's still a work in progress, but I think a lot's really changed from that game. I think kind of the biggest takeaway maybe that would apply to this weekend is just the Texans' style of offense. That could be something as good as the Chiefs have played defensively lately. This is a style of offense that I think could hurt Kansas City the most, the run-pass option and just having multiple guys in the backfield with the quarterback and shotgun. That's I think, something that has plagued the Chiefs more so than other offenses.
In that game, Carlos Hyde, 26 carries, 116 yards, and a touchdown, average 4.5 a carry. Deshaun Watson, even 10 carries, 42 yards, 2 touchdowns on the ground. He didn't have a fantastic game through the air, threw for 280, 1 touchdown, 2 picks. How have you seen the Chiefs? We know their defense as a whole has improved over the last month. How have you seen it improve, particularly against the run, when we saw teams like Houston and Indianapolis run like crazy early in the season to get those big wins on the road?
I think it's just really kind of just changing up the game plan a little bit. They stacked the box the next game after that Houston loss in Denver on Thursday Night Football, and really just kind of made the run fits a lot tighter. I think really the front seven's done a nice job of just really rallying to the football. It seems like they get a lot of game tackles when they kind of stack the box. So I think that's been the biggest thing, is just really kind of taking advantage of what they have up front and using maybe a more advantageous game plan with their front seven.
And I think really looking at this game, another key on this for the Texans is if Will Fuller plays. We don't know how healthy Will Fuller is, but even in that first matchup, Watson gave – 5 different players, 3 or more catches. So he's been able to at least spread the ball around. How do you match up the Texans' receiving core versus the Chiefs' secondary here?
I think really it's going to have to be, I think, a bigger mix of zone coverage more than anything. Kansas City does a lot of movement pre-snap with their defensive backs. If you look at Week 17 against the Chargers, there was one play where Phillip Rivers threw an interception in the end zone, and it looked like he thought Tyrann Mathieu was going to be blitzing on that play. Instead, it was another defensive back. Mathieu dropped back in coverage and got the interception. So I think there's always going to be some moving parts, and primarily more zone coverage I think would work better than man coverage for the most part against Deshaun Watson and his arm for sure.
So give me an X factor for this game, Braden, and what's your early prediction a couple days from the game?
I think the X factor really is going to be I'm kind of looking at the younger players for the Chiefs that have gotten a bigger role this season, more particularly probably Charvarius Ward at cornerback. He's had a really outstanding season. I think he had the 3rd or 4th best passer rating again. So, you know, he I think did a pretty fair job against DeAndre Hopkins for the most part in that first matchup. As long as he can kind of, you know, stay away from committing penalties, I think he is going to be a very important piece for this Chiefs defense on Sunday. as far as a prediction goes, I think a lot of people think the Chiefs win big. I think it's going to be a lot closer game, but I think the Chiefs will pull it out. And I think it's actually going to be this game where, you know, even though the Chiefs defense has kind of been the better unit overall lately, I think the offense is going to kind of come out of their sleep, so to speak, and, you know, kind of wake up the rest of the AFC and have a really big game. So I think it's going to be a high scoring, close game, and the Chiefs come away with the win.
So take a look at one other quick bit of Chiefs news not relating to the playoff game before we look at the other three playoff games. A lot of the talk lately with the Giants giving their head coaching job to former Patriots special teams coordinator Joe Judge is why not Chiefs offensive coordinator Eric Bieniemy with the Rooney Rule and things like that. I won't get into all the stuff with the Rooney Rule. I want to get into, though, how have you viewed Eric Bieniemy as a play caller? I know with Andy Reid it can kind of get overlooked, but how have you seen him develop as an offensive coordinator so far?
I think it's just really, you know, he knows how far to push, I think, the players. You know, one guy I kind of look at a lot is Travis Kelce and his relationship with Bieniemy. There's a certain time where Kelce can kind of get frustrated, but I really look to Bieniemy a lot. And just how he is able to kind of push the guys. He's a player's coach, I think, more than anything. And you know, as the offensive coordinator, kind of looking more at that, I think he's just really learned a lot. Kind of how to pace the offense and, you know, kind of when to take chances, you know, learning from Andy Reid. And, you know, I know Reid can get conservative at times, but I think with Bieniemy, he's kind of known to when to take chances, maybe when Reid doesn't want to. So I think that's the biggest thing from an offensive coordinator standpoint.
And I just find it weird that he hasn't gotten a job yet, because we always in the NFL seem to look at hiring coaches that change the trend, like Sean McVay. I mean, Bieniemy has changed his chief offense, like you said, to a high-paced offense with Mahomes and kind of revolutionized things with the way Mahomes has played the game. It makes really not much sense. I know he's had a lot of interviews, but you'd feel like he would have a job by now with the impact that chief offense has taken over the last 2 years.
Yeah, and I mean, I guess if there's one thing I could say, maybe if teams are looking at something specifically like what unit a certain guy coaches, I think you look compared to other past offensive coordinators for the Chiefs, Doug Peterson and Matt Nagy, they were both quarterback coaches, so maybe the fact that Bieniemy's a running back coach, I don't know if that has any stake with teams that are interviewing him, but it's just, yeah, very, very weird to see because, you know, last year, I thought a lot of people thought he'd get the job last year, and now that he doesn't have one currently, it's very shocking for sure.
Quick point on the run game, especially when you look back at that first matchup. Well, Sean McCoy was leading rusher at 44 yards, and nothing really has happened with McCoy down the stretch this year. Damian Williams just came back a couple weeks ago. What's the concern level with the ground game, especially if without that balance, you could see Merciless and Watt on the Texan side maybe get more pass rush here?
Yeah, I think going into the season, Damian Williams was kind of going to be the featured back, and the fact that he got hurt in training camp, and then, you know, you had just some questions from the preseason results and training camp results. They were looking for a lot of answers. So, you know, you bring in LeSean McCoy. It really took a while to see Damian Williams get back to full health and full form. So I think now looking at it, he's going to probably be the lead back role. I know the team has kind of said they were resting LeSean McCoy a little bit for the postseason run. If that's true, that's really interesting. But I think a lot of people think he's more out of favor than anything. So I think it's more likely we're going to see probably, say, 80% of Damian Williams and maybe a little bit of Thompson and McCoy sprinkled in there. But I think they're kind of running the running backs kind of the way they envisioned at the outset of the season, more so than maybe what, you know, happened by the end of the preseason going into the regular season.
So let's take a look at the other three playoff games. So let's stay with the AFC with the game on Saturday night, 8:15 Eastern, Titans and Ravens. Titans off the big win in New England. What are you looking at here in this matchup?
I'm really just kind of interested to see if Tennessee is going to lean on Derrick Henry because, you know, obviously the run he's had has been very impressive. And I'm kind of questioning Baltimore's defense a little bit. Are they, you know, for real? I think they obviously looked really good the last month of the year, but just, you know, as good as kind of you look at New England's defense, if Baltimore's defense, you know, even as good as they've been playing, if Derrick Henry is able to run all over him, I think it's going to be a long night for him. So really it's the Derrick Henry factor there for me going up against the Baltimore defense.
Yeah, I think if I had a word for this one, it'd be smash mouth, because I think this is going to be a real low-scoring, ground attack kind of ball game. And the big thing is Mark Ingram, who showed up back on the injury report, had a setback earlier this week in practice. If he can't go or is limited, puts a lot of pressure on Gus Edwards and Justice Hill, and puts really a lot of pressure on Lamar Jackson, because I tend to think, Brandon, that if you're going to beat the Ravens, this is the game to beat them, because Lamar Jackson still hasn't won a postseason game yet. He's got that pressure over him. There's not much really pressure on Ryan Tannehill, even though he might have to throw the ball more than 15 times in this game compared to last week. This is a time, I think, if Baltimore's vulnerable, it's this week, not next week.
Yeah, and for sure. I think I always kind of look at certain teams, you know, resting their starters in week 17. I know you don't want to get anyone more banged up maybe than they already are, but you could have had maybe the starters play a series or two week 17. I always kind of look at that, you know, week or 2 weeks off. How rusty your team's going to be following resting their starters, it's going to be really interesting given, you know, how Tennessee's played lately.
Taking a look at the early game on Saturday, 4:35, Vikings and 49ers. Brandon, what are you thinking here?
Wow, I was really shocked by the Vikings' performance. I thought the Saints were probably the second best or best team in the NFC going in, and, you know, the Vikings shocked me. So Kirk Cousins, I mean, give a lot of credit to him. I'm really excited to see how he can, you know, maybe put on an encore from last week. Just, you know, that offense has the capabilities of scoring a lot of points with Stephon Diggs and Adam Thielen. So, you know, San Francisco, I'm really not sure how they're going to play in this one, just because, you know, even though they were winning games late in the year, they were kind of giving up more points. So I think this could actually be a lot closer matchup, or maybe even, you know, a lot more likely upset than people are thinking. So I'm actually really excited to see this game and just see how San Francisco performs with that young roster, kind of in everyone's, you know, first playoff performance there.
Yeah, I would agree with you. I mean, Kirk Cousins got another big monkey off his back against the Saints last week, made some big throws down the stretch, didn't really turn the football over. And Dalvin Cook, it appeared healthy, and he was pounding the ball, getting those big yards, keeping Drew Brees off the field. And this is a Niners team that also likes to run the football, and I think they're going to have to do that to kind of take the pressure off Garoppolo. And it's kind of a similar thing to Lamar Jackson in a way, that Jimmy Garoppolo's got his first playoff game. How does he handle the pressure? Does he make a mistake? Sanders and Kittle being healthy kind of helps him being more comfortable in the offense. But if the Vikings defense can get a couple of turnovers, and Garoppolo's prone to make some turnovers at times, it can change this game completely.
Yeah, and the Minnesota defense did a great job last week too. So, you know, obviously Drew Brees didn't have that big of a game, and really it was mostly Taysom Hill that was having kind of the biggest day for the New Orleans offense. So, yeah, it's going to be really interesting to see what Kyle Shanahan has up his sleeve, because there's so many ways the San Francisco offense can beat you, but if Minnesota's D can continue to play well, it's really maybe not going to matter. So, yeah, it's going to be exciting to watch for sure.
And there's secretly a lot of pressure on Kyle Shanahan, too. This is, I believe, his first playoff game since he was the offensive coordinator of 28-3. So who knows how much that's on his mind, especially if San Francisco jumps out into a lead early. So secretly going to take a look at what Shanahan's doing in this football game. The final game on Sunday, 6:40 p.m. Eastern on Fox, Seahawks-Packers, arguably, I think, Brandon, the best game of the weekend. I'm intrigued by this game because, I personally kind of like Seattle here, because I think Russell Wilson just is a different player in the postseason. Pete Carroll's a different coach in the postseason. And quite frankly, it's weird to say this about the Packers. You kind of want to see more out of Aaron Rodgers.
Yeah, I would agree. I think, you know, it seems like Rodgers was almost trying to be maybe too perfect the last week or two of the season. And it just feels like with Green Bay, they're kind of one of the more uninspiring teams that have had a playoff bye in a while that I can remember. And it just seems like so much has to go right for them if, you know, maybe they, you know, have trouble on the first couple drives. You know, they may be kind of out of it, you know, confidence-wise early. So Seattle has a real big chance if they can get an early lead to, you know, keep rolling in this game, I think. So, yeah, I would agree with you on a lot of that. I think Seattle has a big chance this Sunday.
Marshawn Lynch is back, which is just amazing how that guy, after a year and a half, can come back and have explosive carries like he had for the touchdown against the Eagles last week. I know it kind of gets overlooked with the Carson Wentz injury and the big play Wilson made to Metcalf late. They just find running backs off the street and can run for 50, 60 yards and not miss a beat pretty much.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting. I think someone was saying that, you know, when he does his workouts, it's like a boxer workout. You know, he's taking, like, punches in the stomach when he's running. So just the athletic ability and, you know, the ability to work hard like he does, it's amazing. And it was so fun to see him play last week against the Eagles.
So, Brian, before I let you go, tell listeners out there about Full Press Chiefs, what you guys are doing over there to preview the game, the podcast you guys started, and how they can follow you and the site on Twitter.
Yeah, Full Press Chiefs. Usually have about, right now, 4 to 5 articles coming out each week. So I just had a piece come out yesterday talking about how Andy Reid should be aggressive this Sunday against the Texans and, you know, kind of go – with his gut, maybe not lean on the conservative nature that we've seen in the past. Later on this week, I'll have some more strategic articles kind of talking about how Houston's offense matches up with Kansas City's defense and vice versa. And then the podcast, we're 5 episodes in right now, so it's nice to get the podcast going. And right now we're talking Chiefs-Texans, and I always usually have like 4 to 5 different topics, so it's a real nice, you know, around 30-minute show. So go listen to that, and you guys can follow me on Twitter at ebearcat9, all one word, lowercase, EBEARCAT and the number 9. So, yeah, thank you guys, and thanks for having me today.
Definitely. So if you're looking for the most in-depth preview for Chiefs, Texans, Full Press Chiefs, is the way for you to go to get all your information before Sunday's game. Brian, thanks for joining us. Keep up the great work with the site and the show. And we'll talk again soon. Thanks for the time.
Yeah, thank you.
My special thanks to Brian Halachek from Full Press Chiefs for hopping on the show. And I agree with most of what Brian's saying here. I think you look at the Chiefs, I think the key with them is going to be their ground game. If they can get LeSean McCoy and Damian Williams going and create that balance for Patrick Mahomes, I think it's going to be enough for the Chiefs in this game. I think everybody wants to see a Chiefs-Ravens AFC Championship, rightfully so. I kind of want to see that too. I think you'll ultimately get it. But Kansas City can't afford to turn the football over. Remember, they had a 17-0 lead week 6 against the Texans and still lost the game. Tyreek Hill had 2 touchdowns, still lost the game. The key in that game for the Texans, Deshaun Watson, we mentioned earlier, 2 touchdowns on the ground, did throw 2 picks, but Carlos Hyde was able to get those yards on the ground. If the Texans can control the clock, keep Mahomes off the field, they've got a great shot in this game. Also, will Fuller play for Houston? If Fuller plays, it's an added weapon for Watson to go with Hopkins and Kenny Stills. So I'm going to go with the Chiefs in this game and beat the Texans. So I'll give you my 4 picks for this week. I got the Vikings upset the 49ers. I got the Ravens beat the Titans in a low-scoring game. Would not be surprised if Tennessee kept it close. I think it's something like a 23-13 kind of game. I like the Chiefs over the Texans, although I think Houston covers the plus 10. And I think Seattle upsets Green Bay and Lambeau. I just trust Russell Wilson more than I trust Aaron Rodgers. And I think the Packers want to win this game, they've got to win in a shootout, and they're not really designed that way. Matt LaFleur's got this team playing more ground and pound with Aaron Jones, taking some of the pressure off of Rodgers. But if you play low scoring, that's kind of in Seattle's favor. Seattle is not a team that's going to light up the offensive scoreboard. So if the Packers want to win, score a bunch of points. I know that's cliche, but I think an offensive shootout means the Packers win. If it's defensive, I think Seattle wins the game. So give me Vikings, Ravens, Chiefs, Seahawks, which sets up a Vikings-Seahawks NFC Championship game in Seattle, 6 versus 5, which has never happened. Don't think you would have thought Seattle would be the one hosting an NFC Championship game, but if my predictions hold, that would be the case. And the Chiefs, Ravens, of course, Mahomes against Lamar in Baltimore next Sunday, which should be so much fun. Battle of what will be the reigning two MVPs. Let's get in the national championship game again Monday night, 8 o'clock on ESPN in New Orleans, Clemson, LSU. We had Amy McKenna from Tiger Vision on last week to break it down from Clemson's side. So if you missed that interview, feel free to go back into iTunes. Remember, we're on iTunes. Download, subscribe, give a 5-star rating. Tell us what you like about the show, don't like about the show. Glad to hear from you. But we got episode 9 in there from last week where we talked with Amy from Tiger Vision. And I think you look at this game, if it's a battle of offenses, I like LSU. I think if Clemson's going to win this game, they've got to get some turnovers on defense. And they're at least a defensive unit to trust because you have to respect Brett Venables, for the job he's done on the defensive side of the ball. He's a great defensive coordinator, arguably the best in college football. He's going to have something in the line to at least confuse Burrow early. But right now, the key for Clemson, you got to contain Chase and Jefferson on the outside to have any shot in this game. And even if you do, LSU's got Edwards-Helaire on the ground that is a little bit more healthier after the Oklahoma game. He's going to find a way, I think, to at least control the clock to a degree. So you got him paired with Travis Etienne's better running back for Clemson, but I'd like Edwards-Helaire slightly more on the LSU side just for a unit. I would take Etienne, though, in terms of the better back. But this is a legacy game for Clemson. Trevor Lawrence, a chance at back-to-back national championships. 29 straight wins for Clemson. This is basically like the equivalent of the New England Patriots. Chance to win back-to-back championships. Dabo Sweeney, a third championship. He's already the best college football coach in America with Nick Saban. It's just going to add to his legacy as a coach. And I think if you're Clemson, I think your goal is to use Etienne more as a runner in this game. They use him a lot more as a receiver in the Fiesta Bowl. Use him as a runner here. Then you're able, in a sense, to keep Burrow off the field. And I think for Clemson to win this game, they have to control time of possession. Yes, they're going to have to get some big-time points, and T. Higgins can beat you over the top with his speed at wide receiver. But to me, it's all about the ground game more for Clemson. I think this is a high-scoring game. You like LSU. If it's a defensive game, I think you go with Clemson. My prediction, and I need this win for LSU because it would make me 30-11 in bowl games this year, I'm going to go with LSU to win 42-35. I think it's going to be a really high-scoring game. I would take right now the over-under 69.5. I think it's going to go over. So give me LSU in the Battle of the Tigers to win this game. Get Coach O, Ed Orgeron, his first national championship. And for Clemson, nothing to be ashamed of if you lose this game. It's basically a road game for Clemson when it's technically a neutral site game. So no shame if Clemson loses this game. I think it will stay close. But I am going to roll with LSU in this game to win the national championship. One last thing I want to get to, or a couple things real quick. I want to talk more on the Mike Leach thing. I'm intrigued by this for Mississippi State because you have their opportunity next year. Look at the schedule Mike Leach runs into next year. Back-to-back-to-back weeks they have at Alabama, at LSU, home to Auburn. Not an easy schedule. But look at the Egg Bowl. The Egg Bowl the next few years, if you're a reporter down in Mississippi, I think you're going to absolutely love it. It is Mike Leach from Mississippi State and Lane Kiffin for Ole Miss. It's going to be who has the best news conference of the week those weeks because you're going to get memorable quotes from both of those guys. This is a fun hire for the SEC. I mentioned at the top of the show, whether you're a hater or a lover of the SEC, you're going to tune in because it's another great coach to add to the conference. Creates more buzz. Mississippi State plays NC State at a conference next year. We'll see what Washington State decides to do, but to bring an air raid offense to the SEC is going to be a lot of fun. Last thing I want to get into, what's going on with the Brooklyn Nets? And maybe I'll have Gerald on sometime later this month to talk about it a little bit more. Yesterday, and even some part today, we have seen Kevin Durant fire back at his critics on Twitter. He hasn't played this year. It doesn't look like he's going to play this year with the ACL injury. Kyrie Irving hasn't played in a couple months. The Nets have been awful over the last 2 weeks. Right now they're the 8th seed in the East. Right, only 3 games ahead of a playoff spot. And no one doubts the Brooklyn Nets are going to make the playoffs at some point, but this is a little bit dicey for Kenny Atkinson here in the Nets. And you got Kevin Durant, who's out for the rest of the season. And I saw his conversation with Brandon Tierney. And I love Brandon Tierney. I listen to him on ESPN Radio. He's now on CBS Sports Network with Tiki Barber, Tiki and Tierney, every weekday. And I like that Brandon said, like, he told KD, look, you had a chance to come to the Garden. You didn't. And he said Carmelo took the bat, went in the batter's box and took a swing. Carmelo at least gave it a shot. That's a criticism of Kevin Durant, whether you like it or not. And it just seems like Kevin Durant's been ever more sensitive since he left Oklahoma City for Golden State. He's been firing back on Twitter constantly. Remember, he had the burner account. And you can see why some people just don't like Kevin Durant. People loved him when he was Oklahoma City. Now it's the complete opposite. We've seen LeBron turn that around, but LeBron had to go back to Cleveland to turn that around for him. There's no sense KD's ever going back to Oklahoma City to change things. Maybe if he goes and wins something with Brooklyn, things will change. We'll see what he looks like when he comes back, and I think that's going to be a big what-if. But you don't need to go back at the fans. Like, I feel like Kevin Durant should be above that. I get why he's doing it. I don't blame him for doing it necessarily. But at the same time, you're above everybody else. You should be. Like, don't give those fans the satisfaction of getting under your skin, is what I would say. But I'm not in his shoes. I can't judge. I don't get many hate tweets on Twitter, and I'm happy that I don't, but I know someday I'm going to, and I would hope that I'd be able to rise above that and just not either not answer or have a more polite response. But, again, I can't blame Kevin Durant for commenting on these things because it hurts him, and I can't get in his shoes. But I was kind of surprised by how much Kevin Durant was going out on Twitter over the last couple of days. But we'll see how the Nets respond. I think you got a big game this week in the NBA. Lakers-Mavericks coming up. It's always a fun game. Dallas is entertaining. Lakers, hopefully, will have Anthony Davis back. We'll see what happens to that. Zion Williamson's getting close to playing. He's practicing. Hopefully, we see him on the court soon. Got the All-Star game coming up next month. Trade deadline. So we're going to get Gerald on, hopefully, before then to preview all that for us. So, again, my special thanks to Brayden Halacek from Full Press Chiefs for hopping on the show. We had a lot of fun talking with him about what's going on in the divisional playoffs. Again, follow me on Twitter, at RickNader555. It's at R-I-C-K, letter I, Nader like in Terminator 555. Follow us on Twitter, at Full Press Radio, at FP Coverage. For all of your football, baseball, basketball, hockey, college sports, we got everything for you. Subscribe to the show on iTunes. Give a rating, whether you like it, dislike it, things you want to see, things you want me to keep going. Let me know on iTunes. You also follow on Spotify, Stitcher Radio, wherever you get your podcasts. We're there. We've got a great lineup of shows here on Full Press Radio. Hope you listen to them as well. We'll be back next week. We're going to recap the divisional round, look ahead to the conference championship games. Hopefully we'll have a guest on for that. We'll recap the national championship between LSU and Clemson. And baseball, of course, we got that Red Sox video replay room with the signs to them. Get more of that. Hopefully we'll have something on the Astros. Spring training only a month away, so it's getting pretty close to baseball season as well. So from all of us here at Full Press Radio, this is Ricky Keeler saying have a great rest of your week. Enjoy the playoff games this weekend. And thanks for kicking in with me, Ricky Keeler.